Richard said, "Noble mother, after hearing Ugrasena's advice, Narada, the dear devotee of Lord Mahavishnu, became absorbed in the taste of exalted love of God." Let's meet dear devotee of Lord Mahavishnu. What does it mean, dear devotee of Lord Mahavishnu?
Lord Narayan.
Huh?
Narayan.
Became absorbed in the taste of exalted love of God, which seized him in its grip. Forgetting everything else, he started off, Veena in hand, having spent much time before in Dwarka. Narada automatically took the familiar roads to the center of the city, amazing roads that led to the neighborhood of the Lord's palaces, and came to a palace of Krishna's that he knew how to reach from earlier visits. Under the spell of intense transcendental agitation, Narada seemed like an ordinary person haunted by a ghost. As this chapter describes, what Narada says to Uddhava and the other devotees in Dwarka inspires them to discuss the present situation in the Raj. Overhearing these talks, Krishna becomes bewildered in ecstatic love. When Narada left Hastinapur for
Dwarka, this is Brihad. This is BBT version?
Yeah. When Narada left Hastinapur for Dwarka, he could think only of how wonderful are Krishna and his devotees. He picked up his veena, but was too distracted to play it. How then did he manage to find his way to Dwarka in Krishna's palaces? He managed because he had gone there many times before. He took the right roads even without paying attention. As the road to the inner city approached the royal quarters, it assumed a bewildering appearance and took many unusual turns, making it a road ordinarily impossible for non-residents to follow. Narada seemed oblivious of what he was doing and managed to arrive at his destination only because he was accustomed to the route. Truth is, however, that when one is conducted helplessly under the control of pure love of God, one actually understands everything perfectly. He certainly cannot forget the way to reach the personality of Godhead. Sometimes tripped and fell to the ground, sometimes stood motionless. Sometimes his body trembled, or he rolled to the ground. He wept in great distress. Sometimes shouted and jumped above. Sometimes sang and danced. Sometimes all the transformations of priceless love of God converged in him at once. The full manifestations of devotional ecstasy appeared in Narada's body, his trembling, perspiration, standing of the bodily hairs on end, and loud crying. Only devotees advanced in prema feel the ecstasies that he externally shows these symptoms. My dear mother, please now be fully attentive. Listen soberly with steady concentration to what I am about to say. Pariksha Maharaj wants his mother to listen carefully so that the Supreme Lord's pastime he is about to describe will enchant her mind and awaken her ecstatic love. Pariksha knows from his own experience that the insanity of love for Krishna is in fact the most natural condition of the soul, and that devotees infected with this insanity are more sober and in touch with reality than anyone else. That day, Lord Krishna was for some reason disturbed in mind and asleep in the inner quarters, and Uddhava had left him and sat down nearby on a terrace at the edge of the palace. There Uddhava was joined by Baladev, Devaki, and Rohini, and queens of Krishna like Rukmini and Satyabhama, as well as various maidservants and other ladies, including Kamsa's mother, Padmavati, a lady who had a habit of making public gossip Prabhupada Krishna's personal affairs. Precisely why Lord Krishna was disturbed, Parikshit will reveal to his mother a little further on in his narration. He does not want her to become agitated by hearing this too soon. Padmavati was Uma Singh's wife. The Shristi Kanda, the Padma Purana describes, that after their marriage she stayed a short time in the house of her father, King Satyakita. At that time, a demonic messenger in Kuberas named Gumila, or Gumila, became attracted to her. Are there different Drumilas?
Mm-hmm.
Are there different Drumilas? Because I thought a devotee named Drumila.
Probably.
I hope so.
Probably.
Became attracted to her, and by disguising himself as Ugrasena, he seduced her. A child born from this illicit connection was Kamsa. All of them sat there silent in shock. They saw that Sri Narada had arrived and that he was acting strange. These devotees, who would regularly take part in Krishna's daily palace activities, were dismayed that Krishna was lying in bed way past the time he normally rose. It was obvious to them that something was seriously wrong, but they couldn't discern exactly what. Nonetheless, they now had to attend to Narada's arrival. Standing up, they brought him carefully to where they had been sitting. It took a moment to restore him to a condition closer to normal, wipe dry his face, wet with tears of love, and they spoke to him simply and gently. When the devotees began talking to Narada, they spoke quietly in a few words, so as not to awaken Krishna, also not to agitate Narada further by saying something wrong. Mm-hmm.
Why you got people above you?
Why?
You, no.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. But they're pretty good generally when I'm here. They have a kid, but I never hear.
Translation, they said, "We have never seen you behave like this. What is the sudden change in you, dear Brahmana? Please sit here quietly for a moment." Next verse. Translation, Sri Parikshit said, Narada replied in a choking voice, tears flowing from his eyes. As he began to speak, he opened his eyes with difficulty and bowed down to offer respects. He was trembling and the hairs on his body stood erect. Next verse. Sri Narada said, "Please arrange for me to meet with Uddhava, the only true object of exquisite good fortune, or else let me have from his feet one particle of dust. Then alone will my heart be at peace." Purport. Uddhava's reason I was asking is because I remember in the book it's not called purport, it's called commentary.
Yeah. Somehow, that disciple of David Mitaswami who put this together, the purport.
Uddhava was present right in front of Narada, but the sage in his ecstasy failed to notice him. Narada first begged to be brought before Uddhava, but then reconsidered and thought himself probably unworthy to meet him. By explaining the demands of his heart, Narada answered the question about the cause of his strange behavior. Next. "He has received an abundance of our Lord's mercy, never gained by the Lord's other servants in the past or even now, because Uddhava is the greatest of all Vaishnavas. The Lord himself calls Uddhava one of his own special expansions." Purport. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when Lord Krishna is speaking to Uddhava, describes his own opulent expansions in the material world, he declares Uddhava his representative amongst the Vaishnavas. Vasudeva Bhagavatam Tvam Tu Bhagavate Svaham. Among those entitled to the name Bhagavan, I am Vasudeva, and you, Uddhava, indeed represent me amongst devotees. Translation. No one has ever been as dear to the Lord, neither the Lord's direct sons like Brahma, nor friends like Shiva, nor brothers like Balaram, nor the goddess Rama, nor the lord's other wives, not even his own unique transcendental body is as dear. Purport, the original Shankarshan is Sri Balaram, Lord Krishna's brother and constant companion. Narad can dare to say that Uddhava is more dear to Krishna even than Balaram and other supreme persons, because Krishna himself has said this to Uddhava. Natthami priyatama atma yuhiri shankara nacha shankara shanuna shri naivatma chayatana bhavan. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Shankarshan, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self is as dear to me as you. According to the commentary of Srila Shridhar Swami, when Lord Krishna in the Bhagavatam spoke this verse, he meant to say, as dear to me as my devotee. But in the ecstasy of his friendship with Uddhava, he at the last moment switched for bhakta, devotee, the word bhavan, you. The Lord's original intention, however, has been to glorify all of his pure devotees. Srila Sanatana Goswami, therefore, earlier in his commentary on Brihad Bhagavatamrita, cited this verse in praise of Prahlad, and now cites it again to praise Uddhava. That was far out. Srila Swami, says Krishna, changed the meaning to the last minute.
I know Srila Swami wrote commentary to the Bhagavatam.
Bhagavatam.
Oh, Bhagavatam, okay.
Translation. The Supreme Lord's own words disclosed in the Puranas to tell the abounding glories of Uddhava's good fortune. Those words born of Sri Krishna's causeless mercy are unlike any other heard in this world. The out of heroes now tell those words in songs. Alas, when those words enter the home of my heart through the gateway of the ears, they steal all my wealth of sobriety. Purport. Narada is an authorized acharya of the Vaishnava Sampradaya. For him, therefore, the highest evidence by which to prove anything is the expressed opinion of the personality of Godhead and the effect of the Lord's words on the thought and behavior of his devotees. In regards to Uddhava, Krishna has stated his opinion clearly. Ataitat paramam guryam shimbranto yadanandana sugopyam pivakshyami tvamme vritya suritsaka. My dear Uddhava, O beloved of the Yadu dynasty, because you are my servant, well-wisher, and friend, I shall now speak to you the most confidential knowledge. Please hear as I explain these great mysteries to you. Madhavo napimamanyo yadgudanarita Prabhuratma Mavayunam Lokam Garahayani Patishta Tishtatu. Uddhava is not inferior to me in any way because he is never affected by the modes of material nature. Therefore he may remain in this world to disseminate specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. Professional thieves in ancient India were proficient in using narcotic powders to put unsuspecting householders into a stupor, so that the houses could be easily robbed. We can read the details of these methods in minor literary works such as Dandi's Dasha Kumara Charita. Nara alludes to such criminal skills in describing the looting of his own heart by the glories of Uddhava. That's for Uddhava praises the Vrijvasis. Sri Parikshit said, impelled by great respect for Narad, Uddhava suddenly stood up, held Narad's feet and embraced them. Aware of what Narad was thinking, Uddhava remembered many devotees who had received the Lord's special favor. As Uddhava meditated on those devotees, their love for the Lord, and the wealth of their loving ecstasies, he felt distress.
What's that? We're going to be reading for
He felt distress, thinking himself fallen, and cried helplessly. Only with some effort was he able to regain his composure. Then he became joyful and spoke to the sage, moved by the sattvika emotion of jealousy. Purport. Uddhava knew that Narada was thinking about how to find the best recipient of the Supreme Lord's favor. He intelligently deduced this from the way Narada was acting. This logical conclusion led Uddhava to remember many famous Vaishnavas of the past who had enjoyed the Lord's favor. The ecstasies of pure Vaishnavas which appear on their bodies as perspiration, trembling, percolation, and so on, are the priceless treasures of those Vaishnavas, a treasure whose value can be estimated only by Vaishnavas following in their footsteps. As Uddhava meditated on the great fortune of Krishna's devotees, he felt undeserving. He experienced the essential devotional prerequisite of dānya, utter humility. For Uddhava to regain his composure required great effort, plus the help of Narad, Balaram, and the others. Uddhava was next confronted by the bhava of jealousy, intolerance of others' good fortune. This transcendental jealousy, however, was sattvika, born from pure goodness, untouched by the influence of passion and ignorance. Therefore, it was a cause of joy. Having no trace of hatred, this ecstatic jealousy gave no distress to Uddhava or anyone else. Rather, in his jealousy, he entered even deeper into the trance of his attraction to Krishna, just as devotees in conjugal mood become even more blissfully attached to Krishna when jealous of his other lovers.
Shriman Uddhava said, "O mighty one, knower of everything, most truthful speaker, greatest of sages, you are the master who teaches the means and the end of bhakti, devotional service to the Supreme Lord. All of you just said about me and more, all you just said about me and more is self-evident to me. I knew it was true before you said it, so did others. O knower of everything hints that Narada is aware of who indeed are Krishna's most favored devotees, led by the divine Srimati Radharani. In the Buddha's judgment, Narada is the best of eloquent speakers like Yudhishthira, and the best of eminent sages like Vyasadeva. Of all who attempt to glorify the Supreme Lord and his devotees, Narada is the most competent. Uddhava therefore feels obliged to accept anything Narada says is true, even something awkward to hear like praising him. Uddhava acknowledges Narada as his Prabhu or spiritual master. What I saw in my recent trip to Vraj took my pride and my special good fortune and suddenly crushed it to dust. Uddhava cannot easily describe his impressions of Vraj, therefore he simply says, what I experienced, yet kept being unbelong. Before he visited Vraj, his pride in being favored by Krishna had been as great as Mount Meru. But when he saw the greater devotion of the Vrajavasis, his pride was quickly reduced to a cloud of dust. Since I have understood the amazing sweetness of Krishna's mercy, of love for him, since then I have understood the amazing sweetness of Krishna's mercy, of love for him, and of those who possess that love. Just by what I saw in Vraj, I came to be most blessed. I was swept away in an ocean of ecstasy, thinking myself completely favored by the Lord, a recipient of his most extreme mercy. So, he considered himself to have been a recipient of mercy by having observed the residence of Vraj.
Krishna, if Krishna sent him there, was Krishna's greatest mercy on him. Put my feet up somehow.
Not supposed to be elevated.
Huh?
Not supposed supposed to keep my feet elevated too. Because, you know. Do you want to bring in that other chair?
What other chair?
The chair that goes back?
No. No, this is what? I think. Go ahead.
Everyone here knows very well.
No.
No? Yes.
You did just by...
Just by what I saw in Raja.
Oh, yeah, that's right then. Right.
Mm-hmm. Everyone here knows very well what I then sang in my ecstasy, what desires I had, and what I did. Better for now not to speak on those matters further. O best of sages, I bow down to you again and again, and I beseech you, please curb your eagerness to relish those various affairs. Buddha, the songs of ecstasy and Vraja are recorded by Sri Shukadeva Swami in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Etaparam tamakato bhumi bhopa bhaiva govinda eva nikilatma niruda bhava vanchati yadhava vyomunayo vayam cha kim brahmajamabhir ananta katara sasya. Among all persons of earth, these cowherd women alone have actually perfected their embodied lives, for they have achieved the perfection of unalloyed love for Lord Govinda. The pure love is hankered after by those who fear material existence, by great sages, and by ourselves as well. For one who has tasted the narrations of the Infinite Lord, what is the use of taking birth as a high-class Brahmin, or even as Lord Brahma himself? Who spoke this? Who spoke this?
Uddhava. When he was leaving. Uh-huh. And the next one.
Asam aho chananarein nujusam aham siyamvinavane kim bhakti guam madatala sarindam yadus jujam svajanam parayipatam ja hitva vejur akunda paradim shritibir vinyam. Kobis and Vrindavan have given up the association of their husbands, sons and other family members who are very difficult to give up, and have forsaken the path of chastity to take shelter at the lotus feet of Mukunda Krishna, which one should search for by Vedic knowledge. Oh, let me be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers, or herbs in Vrindavan, because the gopis trample them and bless them with the dust of their lotus feet. 47-61. Therefore, anyone familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam knows very well what Buddha has said and did in Braj, and what confidential ambition he revealed there. It is no secret that Buddha has discovered in Sri Vrajadam that the gopis headed by Sri Radhika are much more intimately favored by Krishna than himself. But in the present company, Buddha would want to avoid pursuing these topics. Sri Satyabhama and the queens of Dwarka who were there might be displeased to hear the gopis' super excellence described. And Sri Krishna herself, being reminded of the gopis, might be driven into even worse distress. Narada, however, having come to Dwarka just to hear about the recipients of Krishna's greatest mercy, was intent on fulfilling his mission. Uddhava thus submitted to him a humble request that he bring his eagerness under control to avoid undesirable consequences. Sri Parikshit said, because Rohini had long lived in Gokula, its residents held her in high regard, she knew the inner meaning of Uddhava's words, so with tears in her eyes she decided to speak. Despite the precautions taken by Uddhava, there was no way to stop Krishna's intimate devotees from unintentionally turning their conversation toward the pure devotion of Raj. that the people of Sri Nanda Braj had exclusive possession of Krishna's mercy was an essential truth, too irresistibly attractive to be kept covered. Sri Rahini said, "Alas, dear servant of Sri Hari, the residents of Raj have by evil fate all been all but slain. They have lost the last trace of good fortune and are drowning in an ocean of gloom. There they suffer poisoned and scorched in the flames of an underwater fire. So please do not destroy my moment of happiness by reminding me of them."
I used to, other places talk about underwater fire. I couldn't figure out what that was. But Tino and I read how they have these underwater volcanoes and so on, and literally speaking, fire underwater.
Oh, in other words, it's an actual scientific phenomenon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All over, everywhere throughout the ocean. Okay.
Only a person who is dear to Sri Krishna. That what is implied by Avid having taken place underwater?
Say that again.
What is implied by this fire having been taken place underwater? Why is it referred to as an underwater fire as opposed to a flame of an ordinary flame? Forest fire.
The purport will explain it. I mean, either it's because underwater fires are especially hot, or the other is that when you're in the water,
you expect fire.
Yeah, you expect to be cooled, and when you're getting just the opposite, then it's like you're without shelter, and it's most surprising, most shocking.
Well, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, if you're in the water and being tortured, tormented by fire, there's nothing else.
Where do you go?
Yeah. That's interesting, actually. It's a fact. Yeah, how do you put out an underwater fire? Forest fire. Well, of course, Krishna can swallow it, but
You in that picture?
No, that's just there. Yeah. I don't know why. That's New Vrindavan.
New Vrindavan.
That's New Vrindavan. Yeah. Only a person who is dear to Sri Krishna and has received his favor should be considered fortunate. The Rajavasis feel most unfortunate because they view themselves as totally neglected by Krishna. Pain of being deprived of Krishna's attention and personal company is like the inextinguishable bottom of fire, which is said to burn within the ocean. Absence from Krishna brings the Vrajavasis' love for him to a fever pitch, which feels to them like the agony of being poisoned.
And I guess it's also inextinguishable. In other words, it's going on all the time, even in his presence.
Living in Dwarka, Rohini has been able to forget to some extent the misery of the Vrajavasis. But now Uddhava is stirring her memories. When Uddhava mentioned the songs of ecstasy he sang in Braj, he was alluding in particular to the suffering of the gopis But since Rohini is affectionate toward all the Rajavasis, here she has used the generic masculine pronoun, tan, them. In the next two verses, she will express her special concern for Mother Jasoda. When Sri Vasudeva brought me back from Gokul, cries of the greatly distraught Yasoda made even stone shed tears and lightning bolts shatter. And who can let the mouth speak about the other women of Raj, who after Krishna left became like living corpses? Sri Vasudevena by Sri Vasudeva. Something's not right there. No, that's part of the, must be part of the word for word. Sorry. It's a wrong cut. Put it in. Purport. Rohini left Raj just as the residents were being cast adrift in an ocean of separation. Yasoda suffered pitifully, but the young gopis who had known Krishna's intimate love suffered even more. But I'm not very intelligent. After your Lord returned from the house of the spiritual master, my sadness drove me to tell him briefly how the Vajavasis were faring. When Rohini arrived in Mathura, Krishna was away studying with Balaram at the ashram of Sandipani Muni. But after some days, two brothers returned. Rohini was distraught about the plight of the Vrajavasis, who would not likely survive without Krishna. Therefore, she decided to inform Krishna about their condition, even at the risk of discomposing him. She tried to tell him only enough to make him want to visit Vraj to console his devotees, but not tell him so much that his own mental stability would be threatened. Rohini, however, seems not to have acted with the best of intelligence. Revealing one's mind generally relieves anxiety. But one should take care to reveal one's mind under favorable circumstances to avoid disturbing others. Thus, Rohini can say in retrospect that it was unwise for her to have risked exposing Krishna to torment of Virahambhava.
This, though, did not soften his heart, since all he did in response was send you, an expert in the clever art of delivering messages. Purport. Much to Rohini's surprise, Krishna did not respond with deep concern, and would have delivered Krishna's message to the Vrajavasis. They did not recover from their devastation. On the contrary, they showed even more extreme symptoms of distress. 35. Is this your Lord's great favor and mercy on them, as your words imply? 36. My own experience is this. When Krishna lived in Braj, so many calamities threatened to destroy it. Braj was disturbed by demons from Putanatakeshi, by demigods like Varuna and Indra, by creatures like the python, and by the falling of familiar things at Krishna's house, like the cart and the Arjun trees. But to these dangers, the residents paid no regard. Purport. The residents of Raj were simply happy to have Krishna in their midst, and they did not care. Sorry about that, folks. And they did not care what dangers befell them due to Kamsa's seeing Krishna as an enemy to be destroyed. To kill Krishna and to ruin Krishna's homeland comes to stamp many demons. Those mentioned in this verse and others like Kaliya, the serpent, who on Kamsa's order polluted the Jamuna with deadly poison. Besides the friends of Kamsa, Krishna had yet other adversaries, including powerful rulers of heaven. Nonetheless, the Vrajvasis constantly thought only about how to keep Krishna happy. They never considered protecting themselves from the attacks of demigods or demons. As if entranced in each, and 39, in each event they wanted only to assure Krishna's welfare. They never thought about themselves. It was Krishna who entranced the residents of Braj. Acting through his yogamaya potency, he diverted them from paying attention to their own safety. At the same time, he completely protected them. Vaishnavas are supposed to cultivate the understanding that Krishna will protect them from all dangers. Rakshishyati Tivishvasa. Vaishnav Tantra. The Vrajvasis, however, manifest the perfection of this surrender spontaneously without having to practice it. 40. In natural fondness for the son of Nanda, they fully dedicated everything they owned to his pleasure. Purport. So-called love in the material world is always motivated by some selfish desire. But in Shiva and Dhamandam, everyone loves Krishna without any motive. It may be said that unmotivated love of God is also found in Vaikuntha, but that love is restricted by the devotee's awareness of the supremacy of Lord Narayan. In Vrindavan, the residents see Krishna just as Nanda Maharaj's darling son, and not the lord of all existence, or even the hero of the Yadu dynasty. Seeing Krishna with this attitude allows the Vrajvasis to freely express their unconditional praying bhakti. 41. Even then, your Lord did nothing to help them, and who could bear to hear me say what he has been doing now to accomplish the goals of the other devotees? The word swa may mean his own, indicating that the Lord's own goals are what he was busy fulfilling. But the word swa, as used here, was best understood to mean his own devotees. After Krishna went to Mathura, he satisfied his devotees there by killing Kamsa and then living with the Yadus for the rest of his life. For the Yadus, this was pleasing to hear about, but for the Vrajvasis and their sympathizers, it could be intolerable. 42. Parikshit said, upon hearing this, the mother of the wicked Kamsa spoke out, her head shaking, her manner bold, her judgment spoiled by old age. Padmavati was not at all ashamed of being the mother of Krishna's greatest enemy, begotten by the demon Drumila. History records that when Krishna killed Kamsa, she lamented uncontrollably, even though all intelligent persons were pleased at her son's death. Padmavati said, just see, since childhood our Krishna has stayed in the forest full of thorns to guard the cows of those merciless cowherds. Purport. As the name Achyuta indicates, Krishna never fails to carry out his responsibilities even when they are troublesome. 44. They never even gave him shoes. And if when tormented by hunger, he sometimes ate a little stuff made from the milk, the cowherd women punished him by tying him up. Sounds like she's a CPO representative.
Sounds like what?
Rep of CPO. And they scolded him abusively because he was young. Krishna had no choice but to tolerate all this pain. But what does he have to do for those people now? Purport. Angry at Krishna stealing yogurt and buttermilk, Mother Yashoda's neighbors would come to her and complain. Your son sometimes comes to our house before the milking of the cows and releases the calves, and when the master of the house becomes angry, your son merely smiles. Sometimes he devises some process by which he steals palatable curd, butter, and milk, which he then eats and drinks. When the monkeys assemble, he divides it with them, and when the monkeys have their bellies so full they won't take more, he breaks the pots. Sometimes if he gets no opportunity to steal butter or milk from the house, he... Something missing there of the...
Yeah.
Will be angry at the householders, and for his revenge, he will agitate the small children by pinching them. Then when the children begin crying, Krishna will go away. Padmavati says that the abuse Krishna tolerated was heaped upon him because of Kalagati, the movement of time. This can mean that because he was only a child, he was hardly aware of the impropriety of what the cowherds were doing to him. And in any case, it was a situation he was powerless to change. Or else it can mean he was thinking that as long as he had to stay incognito and Braj to hide from Kamsa, he would have to tolerate inconveniences. Go ahead.
She prediction said, Rohini, darling of Braj, was fully endowed with the gravity of wisdom. Ignoring Padmavati's remarks, she went on speaking from where she had left off. Sri Rohini said, then he went to Sri Mathura, capital of the others, killed many enemies, relaxed for a while, became king of the rulers of kings. Vishwanta, having rested, alludes to Krishna's resting at Vishwamagad on the shore of the Yamuna after the labor of killing the wrestlers of Kamsa. In a previous age, Krishna's incarnation, Lord Varaha, rested at the same spot, killing the Manyakshi. Also implied by the words of Vishanta, that Krishna's dwelling peacefully in the city of Dwarka, which he built for himself. The Vrajavasis had little reason to hope he might return to them soon, but he had now become an established king. Now, honored by countless demigods, whom he has sometimes defeated and sometimes helped, this lord of yours no longer even thinks about the residence of Braj. Krishna humiliated Indra by stealing the Parijata tree from heaven, and he aided the demigods by killing the various opponents like Narakasura. Thus all the demigods, whether they had pure love for him or not, had to acknowledge his superior position. Being lavished with so much honor, Krishna, according to Mother Mohini, could hardly remember his former life in simple Vrindavan. Sri Parikshit said, Krishna's dear queen Rukmini, Bhishmaka's daughter, who always lived in Krishna's heart, found these words unbearable, and so she spoke up. Because Srimati Rukmini lived always in Krishna's heart, literally on his chest, in her expansion as the goddess Lakshmi, in Vaikuntha, she perfectly knew every thought and feeling that passed through his heart. Whatever she said, therefore, carried the highest degree of authority. Sri Rukmini said, my dear mother, you don't understand the inner feelings of Krishna at all. His heart is softer than newly churned butter. Why are you saying these things? Just hear from me what I have heard. Even if Rohini did understand Krishna's true feelings, she was not revealing what she knew. Sometimes at night he says this and that in his sleep. Sometimes in the most sweet voice he utters names as if calling his cows. Sometimes he calls his girlfriends or some of the cowherd boys. Sometimes, while asleep, he acts as if he were placing his flute to his mouth and assumes his chanting threefold bending form. Krishna displays the full extent of his beauty only in Rajabhumi. Elsewhere, he does not play the flute or stand in his most attractive pose with his feet, hands, and head forming an enchanting curve. While asleep, he sometimes says, Mother, give me some fresh butter. Sometimes he calls out to me, O Sri Radha, or or Lalita. Sometimes he pulls on my garment and asks me, Chandravali, what are you doing? Sometimes he drenches the pillow on his bed with floods of tears. Then at times he suddenly wakes up, rises from bed, and cries in a pitiful voice, drowning us in an ocean of pain and grief. Report. By us, Srimati Rukmini means all of Krishna's queens. Rukmini's own unique love for Krishna is free from the jealousy usually found among co-wives. Just last night he must have seen something in a dream, because today he has been weeping sorrowfully and is beside himself with agitation. Now he is lying in bed as if asleep, his cloth pulled over his head, he has not even performed his morning duties. Sri Parikshit said, then temperamental Satyavan was surrounded by other wives, answered back in jealous anger. She said, dear Sri Rukmini, why are you prattling on like this? Why talk only about what he does while asleep? Even while active and awake, he seems to have his mind on something else, as if dreaming. Indeed, we are his wives only in name. His young cowherd maidservants are in fact more dear to him than we are. As Satyabhama and other queens witnessed, even in the middle of the day, Krishna often acted as if his mind were a grudge. He would call out to his cows, his friends, and his gopis, just as Rukmini testified he did in his sleep. Sri Parikshit said, blessed Baladev, the darling son of Rahini, an intimate friend of all Gokul, couldn't tolerate hearing his words. Angrily he spoke and replied. Lord Baladev sided with his mother, was dissatisfied with the way the other queens had interpreted Krishna's behavior. Sri Baladev said, dear ladies, all this is nothing but my brother's clever deception. We are intent upon speaking about the misery of the residents of Vraj, misery all too real, and he said, cheating us. Lord Baladev called the Vrajavasi's unhappiness sahaja, natural, or real. According to Lord Baladev, the devotees of Krishna's Dwarka entourage had every reason to be concerned about the plight of their counterparts in Vraj. Krishna's apparent distress, however, should not be taken seriously, because he obtains pleasure only from deceiving others and will therefore go to any extremes to create an illusion. He has put on a show of being distracted by memories of Vraj just to please his Dwarka devotees and give them a taste of the ecstasy of separation even while present with him. Everything Krishna has said about the Vrajavasi's distress and separation from him has some basis in reality, but he has manipulated the facts to create a false appearance that he feels similarly about the Vrajavasi's. So Krishna does that to increase the ecstasy of the...
No, that's Balaram's accusation.
Accusation.
But it's not really the case. He's not putting on a show. That's the implication of his words. I stayed there in Braj for 2 months and tried to restore the Brajvasis to normal, but nothing I said or did was of any avail. While visiting Braj, Lord Balaram had tried to console the devotees by assuring them that Krishna was very much afflicted by separation from them, and that certainly in a few days he would finish killing all the enemies in Mathura and come back home. Balaram also did other things to relieve the Vrajvasi's distress. For example, he performed water sports in Yamuna and constructed new buildings in various places for Krishna to enjoy him upon his return. 60. Seeing no other way to achieve my purpose, I made hundreds of promises to them, and with great effort finally consoled them to some extent. Then I managed to pull myself away and hurried back here. Careful. Lord Balaram concluded that only Krishna's returning to Braj would forestall disaster. Lord Balaram had done everything he could to convince the Brajvasis that Krishna would soon be coming. He had told them that now he was going to Dwarka to bring Krishna personally. But even after offering so many assurances, Balaram had been obliged to pry himself away from Braj by force. No one had wanted to let him leave. I anxiously, 61, requested Krishna, please find some excuse to go to your coward village just once and save the lives of the people there. The coward community was made up of Krishna's own people with whom he had enjoyed the pleasure of his childhood. Now that they were drowning in an ocean of misery, he surely ought to be willing to visit Braj once to save them. 62. From his mouth he said, certainly I shall go. But in his heart he thought otherwise. Indeed, the truth about a person's mind can be known from how he acts. Let's just keep that as a good quote in the future.
You go for what?
Purport. Speaking one way while acting in another is proof of one intends to deceive. 63. Sri Parikshit said, hearing this, the personality of Godhead, who is ruled by the love of those dear to him, suddenly got up from his bed and came outside, loudly weeping. 64. From his fully blossoming lotus eyes rained a flood of tears. With a choked voice, tormented by compassion for others, he spoke as follows. An inferior person cares only for his own welfare, whereas a virtuous person thinks about Paranugraha, compassionate help for others. Krishna's Paranugraha is unlimited. Taking the word para in the sense of enemies, we can understand that he is compassionate even to those who hate him. Certainly, therefore, he would not neglect his devotees. 65. The Supreme Lord said, yes, it is true. My heart is made of solid diamond. It must be so because it is not yet split in half. Those devotees took care of me for so long, from the very beginning of my childhood, and still I have forgotten all about their exceptional love. Be that as it may, I must somehow do something to help them. I have indeed been cruel to have caused those gentle souls such extreme grief. 68. O Brother Rudava, you know everything, and you are the best of my dear friends. Please tell me at once what I should do. Please lift me from this ocean of distress. Sri Parikshit said, Devaki was loving to her son and was a dear friend to Nanda's wife. She said, you should give your best well wishes, whatever they want. Purport. Mother Devaki anticipated that Rudava's reply would likely inspire Krishna to leave for Gokula, so she interrupted. Before Uddhava could speak, she suggested to Krishna that he placate the Vrijvasis some other way than by returning.
Excuse me, one second. Hmm? Brush is sending me a message about that. Then, fearing that the kingdom is about to be given away, is that the right place? Then, fearing that the kingdom was about to be given away, old Padmavati, the Lord's grandmother, the queen of the other kingdom, the same, gathered her muddled wits to cleverly feign the joking spirit. To protect her husband's domain, she spoke up again, even though Balaram's mother had snubbed her by ignoring her previous remarks. Invoking eloquence, Padmavati tried to change the mood to bring Krishna the exclusive shelter of the young dynasty by Jinova. In her own way, Padmavati had good intentions. She saw that unless Krishna could be calmed down, the whole Yadu clan faced destruction. He might even offer to turn the rule of Dwarka over to Nanda and the cowherds. To avert such danger, Padmavati tried a humorous distraction. Padmavati said, "Krishna, why should you lament? Just listen to my advice. While living 11 years in the home of Nanda Gopa, you two brothers enjoyed various comforts. For that, I swear, my husband will pay Nanda twice over. My husband will see to it that Garbhamuni calculates the amount to the smallest fraction and delivers it by his own hand. And if Nanda owes you payment for tending his cows, let him pay you or not as he wishes." Report. For 11 years, Upasena's grandson Krishna lived and enjoyed in the house of Nanda Maharaj. Krishna might not take seriously Padmavati's idea to reimburse Nanda Maharaj and satisfy him with money. But even if Krishna becomes amused by it, the purpose of changing Krishna's mood will be achieved. She reminds Krishna that her husband, Upasena, is very generous and will not hesitate to pay twice whatever might be owed. And even if Nanda fails to remunerate Krishna and Balaram for their cow tending, that is a small concern. In settling the accounts, Nanda may not want to accept anything extra from Upasena, and that will be all the better. So there's no need to annoy Nanda Maharaj over the small amount for the salaries of Krishna and Balaram. Gargamuni is the best person to calculate the payment because he's an excellent astrologer, accustomed to making careful mathematical reckonings and configurations, plans. Moreover, though not saying so, Padmavati thinks that if the scrupulous Garga decides the amount to pay and delivers it himself, the cowherds will not get more than they deserve. Since Nanda is only a cowherd, he is not used to having much wealth other than a stock of milk products. The expenses for the two brothers should be repaid, but not those of Rohini and the maidservants who had stayed with her in Raj, because she had insulted Padmavati by ignoring her previous comments. Padmavati is correct in figuring the duration of Krishna's stay in Braj is 11 years. Srimad Bhagavatam confirms this. Tiptoanandu Rajam, Nita Pitra Kamsad, Vibhibhyata, Ekadasa, Samasta Tulakudara, Udarchi Sabalopasa. Thereafter, fearing Kamsa, Krishna's father brought Krishna to the cow pastures of Maharajananda. And there Krishna lived for 11 years like a covered flame with his elder brother Baladeva. This statement by Uddhava does not imply that after 11 years of living in Raj in Kalyuga, Krishna and Balaram came out of hiding and continued living in Raj for 7 years more. After all, when Kura came to take the two brothers away from Gokul, he saw that they were in the Kishore age, that is, they were young adolescents. Tadarsha Krishnam Raman Chagraje Godohanam Gatao Pitta Nimam Varadara Sharad Amguru Hekshana Kishorao Shyamala Svita Sri Niketao Vihatmajam. He saw Krishna and Balaram in the village of Raj going to milk the cows. Krishna wore yellow garments, Balaram blue, and their eyes resembled autumnal lotuses. The two shelters of the goddess of fortune were in the Kishore age, one of them with dark blue complexion and the other white. Bhagavatam 10:38-28:29. Again, when the two lords arrived in Mathura and entered Kamsa's arena to join the wrestling competition, the women of the city described them as adolescents. Kva vajra sara sarvanga mala sanindra sanga kva chati sukumaranga kishora napta yavana. Two professional wrestlers have limbs as strong as lightning bolts and bodies resembling mighty mountains. What comparison can there be between those wrestlers and these two young, immature boys with exceedingly tender limbs. It is generally understood that the Kishora period of youth begins in one's 11th year. According to Vedic injunctions, Kshatriyas in particular are supposed to receive their sacred thread initiation in the 11th year. So it was that Krishna and Balaram took initiation at that age, right after killing Kamsa. In the arena after Kamsa's death, Krishna told Sri Vasudeva and Devaki, Nasmatal Yuvayostata Nityodkanti Tayor Api Valya Palanda Kaishara Putra Vyam Tabavan Kachit. Because of us, your two sons, you always remained in anxiety and could never enjoy our childhood, boyhood, or youth. Bhagavatam 10.45.3. Although Krishna and Balaram had just entered the Kishore age, the supreme heroic prowess they were showing in Mathura covered the natural charm of their youth. Thus Vasudeva and Devaki were not able to experience the sweetness of the boys in their adolescence. In other words, although Krishna's beauty is described as that of a full-grown youth, this does not mean he had passed beyond the Kishore age. As an alternative explanation of Krishna's statement to his parents, we can accept that when Krishna and Balaram came to Mathura, they were actually at the end of the Kishore age in the 15th year. Poetry of Sri Bhagavatam Thakur gives evidence that in some of the later pastimes, before leaving Vrindavan, Krishna manifested symptoms of full-grown youth and even acted as an adult. A child may act like an adult by displaying some special strength or skill. The 15th year is especially attractive because at that age the body reaches adulthood at its peak of youthful beauty. But because Krishna was supremely gentle by nature, his 15 years seemed like the beginning of his Kaishora period. And his period of debt for enjoying Nanda Maharaj's milk products is still calculated as only 11 years, since for the first 4 years he was an infant sucking his mother's breast. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
Another way of calculating it.
Huh?
That's another way of calculating
it. Yeah. In this way, we can reconcile the contradictions that seem to appear among various statements, some saying he was a new adolescent, and others a full-grown youth.
It usually, and even Sanatan and the Bhagavatam, Yashwana talks about how, like, 50% older than their age. They appear 50% older.
Is it 50?
Yeah. So 11.
Oh, yes, right. No,
that's another 5. That's
15.
Yeah, 15. Because it's not, it's 10 months, something. 10 years, some months, 9 months, something like that, 10 months. So 10 ends up being 15 years, some number, just at the edge of Yovana. Navi, that's why Navi Yovana is just on the edge of youth.
Navi Yovana and Shalom.
Kishore.
Kishore Yovana.
But yeah, I missed that. I never noticed that one. That, all right, 11 years after with the first four.
After the first four. Yeah. I told him I'd be there at 7:30 too.
Yeah. I'll make my way back.